All right, we're going to finish up Soccer Matters in big style here tonight. Quick word, though, for my friends at Advantage BMW Midtown. Now, I've driven one for years. I'm in an X5 now. Amazing machine. Love the drive. It is the ultimate driving machine. But the other thing I love is the customer service down at Advantage BMW Midtown. It is second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown. They'll cover you with sales, service, finance, and it can be done so easy. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Say hello to Philip. Say hello to Justin. We go right now out to St. Louis, Missouri, with the one and only U.S. soccer legendary defender, Marcelo Balboa. He is on the call for TUDN when the United States tomorrow night will take on Uruguay. Marcelo, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
So I hear you're at Uruguay practice. Are you going to jump into the 5-2 or anything?
No, man, I played with my 19s the other day with Colorado, and it's been 2 days. I can't move, so there's no chance I'm jumping in here.
Yeah, the old body is hanging in there and hanging, doing just fine, I think.
Exactly. It's good enough for my my over 48 group.
All right, so let's get down to things here. This is turning out to be a very interesting game to me because I want to see if Greg Berhalter is going to remain steadfast to his new sort of revolutionary playing style, playing out of the back and sticking to that against Uruguay. Is he a little bit under the gun having to do that now going into this game?
I don't think he's under the gun. I think it's a process that this is how he wants to play, and you can't veer from it. You know what I mean? So we saw it against Mexico. He struggled a little bit, the U.S. playing out of the back. First 15 minutes, they were fine. After that, they struggled. But I think this is a team that's, listen, in the Gold Cup final, they put a few over the top. They broke the pressure of the 7-man pressure that they bring in, the press, and they got a ball into Josie, and they're off and running. They didn't do that this game. They forced the ball out of the back. They were trying to play. And when Tata Martino, right about 15 minutes to 20 minutes, switched into a 4-2-3-1, the U.S. never adjusted. Greg Berhalter never adjusted. And that's where the game turned.
So is this really just now about taking hard lessons? You know, it is a little bit, I think, confusing to people when you're trying to play out of the back and you might be reinforcing bad decision-making at time. Even though I understand what he's saying is that, look, we have to kind of blood these players. We have to try and implement this new style. But this is, in a way, kind of revolutionary, right? I mean, Greg Berhalter's trying to change in a very dramatic way the game is played at the national team senior level. Isn't that what people wanted?
Listen, I think there's a time and place to play out of the back, and I think you've got to be able to read the situation. You just can't say we're going to play this way no matter what happens and not get a result. I think as a player, you've got to be looking and saying, okay, if I can't play out of pressure, what's my first option? It's basically Jazzy Sardis. It's Pulisic up top. There's angles you can play to get out of pressure. Getting out of pressure sometimes isn't playing through it. It's playing over the top of it. You can't always play through pressure. So you've got to eliminate that pressure. One ball can eliminate 7 players. Now you find that pocket into Jazzy Sardis' chest. Now you broke that pressure. So I think it's not about that all the time. It's knowing when to break pressure. How do you break pressure as a defensive team? Is it a long ball? Is it a ball to the keeper? Does he spring a ball into the right back over the top of that first line? But I think it's more about reading the situation. I don't think the U.S. read the situation very well the other day.
So the other thing that obviously jumps out to us is just technically, and I don't say this disrespectfully, but no. Mexico is technically superior in nearly every position. So where is the big picture think process on this? Where is the big picture think tank on this? Is it really a player development thing in our country? Is it the selection process that more technical players aren't making their way through? Where has it come from you? Because, you know, you're involved in the Colorado Rapids player development and their academy system. Where do you see it, Marcelo?
You know, listen, I think little by little we're going to start seeing where the kids come out of the academy system is going to go into the first team instead of going to college. They're going to start going into the USL pro teams that are going to be under 23s, the second teams they have. That's where the development's coming, Glenn. Are we technically better than Mexico? Listen, they've got quite a few special players that can play out of pressure that are playing in big leagues all over the world. and so do we now. But the problem is they don't rely on one player. We're relying on that one special player to get us out of every situation. So in that regard, listen, we need to do a better job at the youth level. We need to do a better job at the junior national team level. And that transition, there's too big of a gap from one generation leaving and one generation coming in. So for me, it's simple. A lot of the players are going to start coming out of the youth developmental academies. They're going to start getting experience. And I'll take you, Sammy Vines, for instance, with Colorado. We signed him as a homegrown. We sent him to Charlotte. He got 30-something odd games in 1 year. He came back this year ready to play at that level. He knew what it was like. He knew what it was, what it meant to be a professional. And he took the right process, and he took it straight up. He didn't skip any steps. And now look at Sammy Vines this year, consistent defender. He's getting to learn how the league has worked, and he's developed through the right systems. I think sometimes we want to leapfrog kids, and we want to leapfrog them from the U19s into the starting team on an MLS team, or we want to start them straight into the national team. And that's not the way it works all over the country.
Marcelo Balboa joining us, the U.S. international, also a Hall of Fame member here in the United States, and works in the Development Academy for the Colorado Rapids, as well as his television work with TUDN. Okay, so I go back to Sammy Vines you're talking about there. You send him to a USL team, he gets 30 games, but you and I know there's a ton of teams in this league that sign these homegrown kids, and they're not getting enough minutes at the USL team because there's an emphasis on winning. And ultimately, they don't develop, and ultimately, they don't get any first-team minutes in MLS. And three years later, they're gone.
Yeah, I think that's where there's a big drop-off in what we're doing. I think that the USL should have an under-23 team, and it should be all MLS teams. All MLS teams should be under-23 in USL. Have them have their own bracket, be it a MLS Junior or whatever it's called in USL Pro, where all MLS teams are putting their players there. You can sign a few older players because you need some veterans, but the majority of the homegrown kids, the majority of the kids that are developing that you think at 18 could be potentially in that system or could be potentially signed as a homegrown, should be put in that U23 and give them time to develop. I think that when you start missing steps, listen, there's not a lot of Christian Pulisics out there. You know what I mean? So there's good, solid players throughout this league that are being signed as homegrown. The problem is we're putting them into a situation where they're either sink or swim. You put them into an MLS team, and it's either they play well and then or they don't, and we don't see them for a while. I think the process is real simple. Under 18s, moving to a USL Pro, under 23, where they're playing all MLS teams, they travel with the first team to see what it's like to be a professional. But you're not missing any steps in the process of their development. When you miss a step in their development, eventually it'll creep back into play. And I think that's where we're making a lot of mistakes right now, is we're allowing kids that are 16, 17, 18 to sign, and boom, you put them on the first field. They don't have a great game. Instead of maybe signing, putting them in the USL and getting them 25 games in a year.
Marcelo, how do you balance, and I see this with academies throughout the league, there's tremendous amount of social media. They're definitely vehicles of promotion. They're money makers in some ways. How do you balance the actual player development side with you know, sometimes the overhyping of some of these young players? Because I hear all the languaging and the culture of excellence and all these key buzzwords that are very corporate to me. Are we going over the top sometimes when it comes to using the academies as marketing tools?
Yeah, I think we are. I think there's a point where a lot of teams feel like other teams, like Dallas, has signed so many homegrowns that we want to keep up with them. And I think it's if you sign a homegrown, we're going to sign a homegrown. But a homegrown to me is a kid who's special, a kid who at 18, 19 can step onto a field and can do a little bit, can help a little bit, can be maybe that 13th, 14th player. And, I remember that, and we can go back and you remember the initial phase of when they started doing homegrown. There are kids that were signed initially to homegrown just to say that they signed a homegrown player. And they're nowhere to be found anymore. Some of these guys aren't even in soccer anymore. And I think that's a disservice to the academy. It's a disservice to that kid because now he signed a homegrown. He made some money, but he missed an opportunity to play 4 years in college. And maybe that was his pathway. Maybe his pathway was to develop as a college player and then maybe get signed into a designated player or a homegrown contract. So there's a lot of different ways that the players are being signed, but My worry is that, you know, there's some of these kids that are being signed. You're like, does this kid have something special to make it and have a 15, 20-year career?
Yeah, because there is a rush to sign these players sometimes because, no question, you know, people want to set the example that we're doing a good job in player development. But to me, player development's guys that make it to the first team and are getting legit minutes, like Sam Vines, who you mentioned.
Yeah, listen, the only way you're going to develop as a player is if you're on the field every day. Training every day, training every single day isn't going to make you a better player. You have to get in games consistently in order to be able to develop your trade and to play faster. Because you can practice as one speed, and a game's a different speed. In practice, you know what your players are, who they are, and how they press you, when they're coming. You know everything about them. After a month of training, you know exactly what's going to happen. When you're in a real game, you've got to react to a guy you've never played before. You've got to study him really quick. Is he right-footed? Is he left-footed? Game fitness, quickness of the game. There's so many things that come to that aspect that I don't think that we take that into account. We sign them. We think it's great that we sign a homegrown. We're looking to develop these young kids. That's great. But if they're not getting any games, they're not going to get any better.
He's Marcelo Balboa. You can catch him on TUDN tomorrow night when the United States takes on Uruguay. I'll be tuning in to check you out, Marcelo, for sure.
Thanks, buddy.
What's the biggest kind of question in your mind going into this game from a U.S. perspective?
A result. We need a result. We can't keep living off the first four or five games of the U.S. team playing a MLS squad against an under 23 Panama, Costa Rica. You've had a few challenges throughout Greg Berhalter's era so far, and we've lost twice to Mexico, and you lost to Venezuela. So now you're looking at this group, and now you've got Uruguay. This is a huge opportunity for U.S. to bounce back and to get a result. And it's not always about playing out of the back. It's not always playing pretty soccer. It's about finally getting a result. You have to get a result eventually. It doesn't matter. You can't sacrifice 10 games to get your system down in order to win a game. You've got to win a key game. You've got to win something in the next few weeks here leading into a Nations League. You know what I mean? So, because we're different. You can lose today, tomorrow, and then if you go play Cuba and you beat Cuba and you beat Canada, that's not the same. I understand it's CONCACAF, and listen, I still think we're going to qualify. I think we will qualify for the World Cup. But the matter is, are we taking steps beyond that? Are we taking steps to make U.S. soccer better? Are we taking steps to make the players better? That's what it's about for me. And then tomorrow, if they come out and don't play well and they win, you know what? A win's a win. It doesn't matter. But I think there's a process of what we're going to see tomorrow is Greg Berhalter playing out of the back, trying to play through the midfield, trying to break lines, trying to unbalance the team, trying to make a numerical advantage on one side of the field as he switches it to the other side. I think we'll see the Greg Berhalter team that we've seen, that they're not going to veer much from it because it is a process. But in that process, you've got to beat teams that are above you, not always beat the teams that are underneath us. We have to be able to beat teams that are above us ranked FIFA's rankings.
Marcelo, but what you just said was, and what we heard Greg Berhalter say after the game, is that he's going to stick to the plan in this next game and that process. Trust that process. Do you think the U.S. can trust that process and get a result against a team as good as Uruguay?
Nowadays, teams are pretty even. I would think the U.S. has been struggling a bit since they haven't qualified for the World Cup. It's been a little bit of disappointment for the fans, and you can see it on social media. You can hear it at the stadiums, and they want a result. They want a team that they can believe in again. They want a team that can go in and beat Mexico and Azteca. That's what they want. That's what they deserve. And the process can only take so long. And if it's not working sooner than later, then you've got to decide how much pressure does Greg Berhalter have if he loses to Uruguay, losing twice to Mexico. You know, getting a result against Cuba is not going to save anybody's job. That should be a win for the United States. Canada will be a real test because they've gotten better and they're moving in an upward direction. So I don't think the next few months are easy for Greg Berhalter at all.
No, and Canada's Christian Pulisic is Alphonso Davies, who's actually gotten a few minutes for Bayern Munich as well. Marcelo, have a good call on Tutto Bene tomorrow, buddy, between the United States and Uruguay. Thank you very much for taking the time to come on the show, and enjoy the rest of the Uruguay practice.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Marcelo Balboa. That's how we wrap it up here tonight for Andrew Carlson, for Victor Ariza, and everybody who tuned in here tonight. Remember, podcastarena.com and iTunes is where you get it. Presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. That'll do it for Soccer Matters tonight. We will go back to our normal time of Tuesday next week. Good night, everyone.